I'm excited to be here today. John and Rick's presentations really set things up really nice on what I've been asked to talk about, and that's more on the nutrition levels around the time of breeding and how that can affect pregnancy rates. And we really got into this kind of looking at what is going on between herds, because we get such big herd-to-herd variations, and how we can develop heifers easier and more cost-effective. Well, you've seen this graph a few different times. We were fortunate a few years ago to actually work with Dr. Cushman down at U.S. Mark, and with all the research they have on their herds. And what we see here is basically these heifers that conceive early in the breeding season stay in the herd longer. Now, what hasn't been pointed out about this study was that these heifers were only selected that first year. All of these heifers were bred by natural service. So we don't have the question of synchronization. We don't have the question of inducing puberty or anything else. All of these heifers were bred by natural service. And we see those that actually conceived earlier and calved early stayed in the herd longer. The other part that was sort of hinted to in the last presentation was, what are we actually selecting for? And so when you look at this first year, this difference in weaning weights we would expect. They were actually set up at 21-day intervals. But what wasn't brought out in those increased weaning weights over those first 6 years was actually by natural service. When we got out here to year 3, 4, 5, there's only a couple of days difference in age of the calf. But yet we still have that increased weaning weight. So it's not the 2 pounds a day advantage that we're seeing. We're actually able to select for something in these heifers that breed early and calve early that we don't even know what we're selecting for yet. Now, one of the things I was actually asked to talk about is embryonic survival. And Rick kind of pointed out that fertility and fertilization rates in cattle is very high. We know it's somewhere around that 95%. But then why, if fertilization is that high, are we always talking in those 50, 60, maybe 70% conception rates when we're talking about synchronization, when we're talking about breeding with natural service? Well, to set that up, I want to take just a few minutes to explain a little bit of early embryo development. And so just like the estrus cycle, so estrus is day zero. Following that, ovulation occurs somewhere around 30 hours later, so day one. Right after ovulation, we'll get fertilization. And then we start going through the different cellular divisions. And as we go down, day 5 or 6 is that when that early embryo migrates into the uterus. About day 7 to 8 is when we get blastocyst formation. So Dr. Stroud was talking earlier on embryo transfer. This is the stage we're normally looking at. But what I like to point out to people that a lot of people don't realize is this one down here, day 15 to 17, maternal recognition of pregnancy. And what it is it's not until about 2 weeks after that cow's been inseminated that she even knows if she's pregnant or not. And so for those first 2 weeks, she doesn't even know whether she's pregnant. We've bred her, everything is great. And so when we talk about embryonic loss, what's the easiest thing for somebody to lose? Something you don't know you have. And so if she doesn't know if she's pregnant, how can she adjust anything to maintain that pregnancy? And so really, for those first 2 weeks, everything's kind of on cruise control. If we do something management-wise to change it, we can have negative effects, and that cow never even knows she was pregnant, never knows she lost the embryo, and then she's going to cycle back just normal. The other thing I like to point out is if we look down, placentation about day 25, definitive attachment about day 42. What's interesting about ruminants is that the embryo doesn't firmly attach until for that first month. And so it's totally living off of secretions into that uterus. And so anything we do to change the nutritional level or the management that heifer is in, we can impact that embryo survival. After it's attached, that's when it can start pulling nutrients from that cow. And it can say, hey, I'm here, and it can start taking what it needs to survive. Up until then, for that first month, it's totally dependent on what gets secreted. And so when we think about embryonic mortality, there's several things that can impact it. We've got genetic factors, heat stress, asynchrony between the embryo and the uterus, effects of the sire, nutrition, shipping stress, all kinds of things we know that can have negative effects on that embryo survival. What I'm going to mainly focus, though, is on the nutritional side and how we actually develop animals can impact that. So as was pointed out earlier, how many of you have thought about in your operations or that how you develop heifers impacting embryo survival? How many of you think about what you do when you wean a calf impacting her AI conception rates? And there's actually some really interesting data out there that actually talks, Rick approached on it there, about a calf learning. Do you realize what you do to that calf when you wean it, you're starting to teach it? And you're teaching it the way it needs to live. And so we know that period of time around weaning is when those heifers learn how to survive. They're now separated from their mother. They're learning the environment they're put into, and they learn how to graze or whatever you put them into. And we know that the skills needed, because grazing is a skill, they have to develop those skills on how to harvest the forage they need to get the intake that they need. And as they get older, their ability to try new things decreases. And so we've all been there. How many of you have stuff, a food you don't like? I've got two young kids. They're very vocal on telling you when we have something to eat that they don't like, or when it is something they do like. And so cattle are the same way. They learn what they like and what they don't like, or what they don't know, you know, for lunch today. If there was something out there that none of us had ever seen before, how many people would have been the first one to run up and try a big helping of it? Probably not. Cattle are the exact same way. And so this learning that occurs around weaning sets them up long term on what they're going to do. And what's interesting is when we actually started this, we got into it kind of by accident. And weren't really thinking about it. We were thinking more along the lines of method of heifer development. Is there a cheaper way to develop heifers? And so what we did is heifers were either weaned and developed out on range, or normal, they were placed in the dry lot. Same group, same research station, the heifers were just split in half, one done one way, one the other. And Robin, who's in the audience, was actually our extension, is in our extension service, was out there overseeing the study. And every month, she brought the heifers in, weighed them, adjusted the feed. We were shooting all of these, unlike what Rick was talking about, we're always shooting for 65% of mature weight, because we don't want to cross that line. We have always been shooting to have the majority of them reaching puberty prior to the breeding season. And so Robin actually adjusted the intakes and what they were getting fed throughout the winter, shooting for 65% of mature weight at the start of the breeding season. And you can see throughout the winter when there was more or less snow, different adjustments. But what really stood out is this May, June. Look at this difference here. What happens in May in northwestern South Dakota? We usually get green grass. And so this was the point that they were actually turned out to graze. And they were actually all turned out in the same pasture together. And this is listed in kilograms, but we can see this huge difference between the group raised on range and the group raised in dry lot. What happened, Robin noticed the difference, so she brought them in the first week after they had been out on grass and took a weight on them. And look at this. This group that had been developed in the feedlot, that first week they were out grazing, and they were all in the same pasture together, all grazing side by side, lost over 3 pounds a day versus the group that had been out on range gaining over 2 pounds a day. In the same pasture, eating the exact same thing. And so I started looking through the literature, see what we can find on that, because that's a tremendous weight loss. There's only one study I could come across that had seen that big of a negative weight gain. It was actually done in Oklahoma several years ago, where they dropped heifers from 120% of maintenance down to 40% of maintenance. That's a huge crash. Those heifers lost about 4 pounds a day over 2 weeks. But what stood out to me is the fact that 60% of them stopped cycling. If we can crash heifers enough to make them stop cycling in 2 weeks, what's going to happen if we breed them at that time point? And so fortunately, that first year, we don't breed at that research station until the end of June, beginning of July. And so all of those heifers had recovered from things. But what we wanted to do was look and see what that crash can happen to that early embryo survival. And so we actually developed a study, replicated it across several herds, where we took heifers that had been developed in the feedlot or developed out on pasture, or even if they spent part of the winter in the feedlot, they had all been out on pasture at least 30 days prior to breeding. So they had gained that grazing experience. Then we synchronized them and AI'd them, all using the same synchronization method. And then within each herd, what happened is both of these treatments went out to the same pasture together for cleanup service by natural service. So they were all grazing in the same pasture together. What did we see? In every one of those situations, those heifers that had prior grazing experience had increased average daily gain. And we can see our herd-to-herd variation here, but every one of those had an improvement if there was prior grazing experience. So as I said, we are always shooting for 65%, so we want the majority of these animals cycling. And as you've heard throughout this morning, one of the key things we always shoot for is the percent of animals cycling prior to the start of the breeding season can have huge impacts on fertility. And I tell everybody when we talk about puberty, we talk about heifer development, we want them pubertal before the breeding season. But what stands out in this, there's no difference in the percent cycling. So you can see here 97 and 94% cycling prior to the start of the breeding season. But we see actually a 10% difference in favor of the group that was developed out on grass. So a 10% difference in AI conception rates can be huge. So why can we be getting this big of an impact of grazing on embryo survival? Well, if we look back at how energy is actually utilized by the body, and we see basal metabolism. So the first thing is, when we give an animal nutrients or ourselves nutrients, it's to keep us alive. Once we meet that requirement, then we can start doing other things. So activity, growth, then we start putting down some reserves. When we get down number five, that's where we start getting pregnancy maintenance. Okay, but to maintain a pregnancy, she has to know she's pregnant. And remember, we're in a time point that she doesn't even know she's pregnant. So we drop down past that. Lactation, more energy reserves. Finally, second to the last down here, we have initiating estrous cycles and pregnancy initiation. So what happens if we go through negative energy or we restrict that animal at this time point? Well, she's going to start knocking these off from the bottom up, and we see pregnancy initiation is one of the early things that can have negative effects to it. And so what impact can that actually have on the uterus? Well, if we're going to change the uterus during this early time period, there's different ways we can impact it. One is if we restrict nutrients enough, we can actually affect some of the hormones that might be circulating. So progesterone is one of the main factors driving uterine secretions. If we have negative impacts on progesterone, we're going to change that uterine environment. However, there's also a study that looked at even just restricting heifers 15% from 100% of maintenance down to 85%, and it impacting early embryo survival. And so they saw differences in embryo growth when they flushed embryos on both day 3 and 8. And so we can see those early differences. Well, if all of this is nutrition-driven, can we fix the problem? Because I get that question all the time. Well, I have no other way. South Dakota, we get, you know, nice 9 months of winter. And how else am I going to develop my heifers if I can't put them in a feedlot? So what can we do to solve the problem? So we started looking at, can we do something to overcome this negative energy that these heifers are going through? And what we did was, these heifers were all developed in a feedlot. They were synchronized and AI'd the same way. So we've stuck to the same 7-day seeder protocol in all of these studies. But then what we did was, at AI, we split them in half. Half of them got moved out to the pasture, just like they'd always had. The other half got moved out to pasture, but we decided to supplement them. They were actually supplemented with 5 pounds of dried distillers each day. Is there anything magical about dried distillers? No, actually they... The Corn Council helped fund it, so guess what? We used distillers because they were helping fund the project. We're looking at supplying enough energy, actually getting some energy into these animals so they don't go through any negative energy balance. Well, working with one of our range scientists, what we decided to also do is look to see what forage was actually out there. And so we went out at the start of this study and actually clipped forage in all of these pastures. We can see the two different herds. And what we did was, the group that actually had was going to pasture alone went to the higher quality pasture. And these pastures are actually very close, but we wanted to make sure that they had the best chance they could. And so we can see in both places, plenty of forage out there. And the nutritionist I work with all tell me, any of these heifers, if they were eating 2% of body weight, should have been gaining a pound a day just off of forage. So what actually happened when we moved these heifers out to grass? Well, if we look, this graph gets a little bit busy. There's herd one and herd two, but I want to focus on the end, the combined herds. And so if we look, weight change from AI to day 42, that group that went to pasture alone over 42 days lost 5 pounds across both herds. That group that was supplemented, they gained 32 pounds over that same 42-day period. And so 42 days, 32 pounds, just under a pound a day. If you lose 5 pounds over 42 days, how much of that was lost right after AI? And so then the big question is, could we fix the problem? Here's AI conception rates. And if you look, 61 versus 76%, we actually saw 15% improvement in AI conception rates just by keeping these heifers or making them avoid that crash. And so yes, it is a nutritional effect. It is driving that embryo survival. One of the questions we kept getting after we did this, though, was how much of it is just diet change? Now, when we develop these heifers in dry lots, they're on a high forage diet. We're not feeding them high concentrate. But the question was still, how much of it is a rumen change? Are they just going out and the bugs changing in their rumen? So we worked with a producer. There's 333 heifers in here. We split them three ways, all on the same ranch. All had been developed the exact same way. They'd been developed out on forage throughout the winter. We synchronized, we AI'd them, And then we wanted to see what change could occur. So a third of them went out to pasture, actually the same pasture they were in before the breeding season. Another third went out to another pasture, basically just across the fence, but we supplemented them. And then the top group here, we moved a third of them into a feedlot. Talk about an environmental change. They had never been in a feedlot in their life. We took a third of them, put them in the feedlot, and said, what is this going to do to them? Again, we clip forages. We can see very good pasture quality. Can also see comparison of what the dry lot diet was. Body condition scores. Everything started 5.4. We can see those that went to a feedlot or went back out to pasture and were supplemented actually gained body condition. And as you would expect, those that basically went to the same pasture they were in before the breeding season maintained exactly where they were. So what happened to conception rates? No difference. 56 to 59% across all three treatments. And so when we take that animal from a pasture environment to a feedlot, guess what? They only have one choice of what to eat, right? You put it in front of them, that's what they're going to have to eat. But if it was a change in rumen, we would have expected to see a crash here also, because we were really changing them the opposite way, but it showed that we weren't just changing that environment. So as we were going through it, one of the things that kept standing out from that first study was this initial week. We see 1 week of a huge drop here. So as I pointed out earlier, that embryo is actually still in the oviduct. It doesn't move to the uterus until about day 5 to 6. Can we really impact an embryo that much while it is moving from the site of fertilization into the uterus? And so what we wanted to do was to see how much a simple week, or actually 6 days, could impact embryo quality. And so we took heifers that were being developed from weaning to breeding. They were on about 120% of NRC requirements. They were all synchronized the same way. There's about 8 different replicates in this study. 132 heifers. At AI, we did one of the two things to them. They either went back into a feedlot pen, and we did this in feedlot so we can control everything, where they stayed on the exact same diet. Or they got restricted to 80% or less of NRC requirements. Now, this was done 2 different ways. About half of the animals, 80%, what we did was we just fed them 80% of what they were eating before. So it goes down to that restriction that was being talked about earlier. But one of the questions you always get with that is, well, if we restrict them, how much of that is a signal that says, I'm hungry, and they're just not being full? So what we wanted to do to account for that is the other group of them, what we did was we fed them all they could eat, but it was a poor quality forage. And we knew that there was no physical way they could eat up to 100%. And so both of those restrictions were applied, and what was interesting is there was no difference between either one of those restrictions. And then on day 6, we went through and we flushed embryos. And if we look at the embryos, we see no real difference in embryo recovery rate, 71 and 62%. But what we do see is differences in embryo quality. Embryo stage, 4.6 versus 3.8. So those that were still on the positive plane of gain actually had embryos that were more developed. Embryo quality is the next one. And we can see a 2 versus a 2.8. Remember, for embryo quality, a lower score is better. So a grade 1 embryo is excellent. So we see almost a full score higher quality embryo in those that were gaining versus those that lost. No difference in accessory sperm number or dead cells, but as you would expect with a more advanced developed embryo that's highly correlated with number of cells, we actually see more cells in those embryos. So they were more advanced. It wasn't just that they looked like they were getting further developed. There was actually more cells to them. And then the other one that really stood out is 80% of the cells were alive versus 70%. So we actually saw more dead cells in the group that was losing, indicating these embryos were not developing as well and were possibly dying as they're going through this. So then the question really came down to, when we look at this, and as John was talking about earlier, a pasture crash, how can you crash when there's plenty of food there to eat? And so when we started looking through the literature, there's actually a lot of work done, some really neat studies done looking at sheep. And you can do this because sheep will actually browse while they eat forage as well as leaves and stuff, and you can train them to eat different things. And what's been known is that young animals, when we introduce them to a new environment, something that's even healthy for them, they'll go eat very small amounts of this food, first of all, to see if they like it, and second of all, to see if it's going to have any negative impact on them. And so as they eat these small amounts, what's happening is they're not consuming enough for the energy they're expending. So even though there's plenty of forage there, until they know what they're eating and they're used to it, they actually go through a negative energy balance. We hear this all the time on the dairy side where it's high lactation. They'll eat a bunch, but they can't eat enough for what they're producing. Well, here, they're just not willing to eat enough because they're learning what they can eat. So we wanted to see exactly what was going on with this behavior. And so we took heifers that had been developed in a feedlot all winter long. And what we did at the start of the study, we took half of them and put them out on pasture and kept the other half in the feedlot. And then 44 days later, we took the group that had stayed in the feedlot and moved them out to pasture. But what we did, here's the weight changes on them. So we took average daily gains at different time points. We can see what beginning this group that was moved to grass right away, almost zero for average daily gain during that first week. The group that stayed in the feedlot, they were gaining good. Nothing had changed about them. 44 days later when we moved them, here's this negative, just like we saw before. But the big question we wanted to ask in this was, how is this affecting behavior? So we actually put pedometers on these animals and said, what is actually going on? So when you put a pedometer on an animal, the group that was out on pasture, they were walking about 6,000 steps a day. And the pedometers we were using, what's interesting is they'll also tell us how long the animal was standing and how long it's laying down. And there was no difference in the amount of time across this entire study on how long these animals were standing up and how long they were laying down. But this group that was out on pasture, on average, was taking about 6,000 steps a day. These breaks in the lines are days that we had to trail them back up to facilities to weigh them. We didn't want to artificially change the data. The group that was in the feedlot, they were taking about 2,500 steps. Now, to give you an idea on pasture size, these heifers, there was 30 heifers in a 30-acre pasture. So nothing large. We were trying to maintain what was local around Brookings. And so as we get further west, they would be much larger pastures. I don't know how big of an impact that would have on how many steps per day as you get to more range environments. But this was done on campus. So what happened to these heifers when we moved them from the feedlot to the pasture when they had pedometers on them? That first day, they got moved out. And remember, they're only moved out to a 30-acre pasture. They took 17,000 steps. So Rick had the picture of the sperm swimming for Michael Phelps. Think about marathon running. How many of you like to sit around all winter and then first nice day of spring, let's go run a marathon? What's that going to do to your body? And that's basically what these heifers did. That first day out on grass, they went and ran 17,000 steps in the same length of time that the group that had been out grazing before. That first day, they jumped up over 8,000. But then you see they went right back to their six. It took 5 days for them to calm back down and actually take the same number of steps as the group that had prior grazing experience. And so what's interesting is that 5 days there corresponds really well to what we've seen for the 7 days of negative weight gain, and also the 6 days that we restricted them and flushed embryos. And so we can really see how what John was talking about on a pasture crash can really be a behavior effect. And so the question has always come up, we've done all of this by moving these heifers from a feedlot to a pasture, a totally new environment. What happens if they just get restricted? What happens in a drought situation or in mismanagement? Well, I was fortunate this spring I was over in Ireland some, and they're all based on grazing. And they've had some of the same questions. And they actually did this study a few years ago where these heifers were all grazing the same pastures, but what they did was they changed the amount of forage in the pasture. So what happens if there's just not enough out there to eat? And so the hot low is they were actually able to consume about 80% dry matter intake of what they should. The high is they had available 200%, so they weren't restricted at all. And if we see heifers that were low pre-breeding, low post-breeding, actually had pretty good embryo survival. They were used to that environment. Goes back to some of what John was talking about on adapting to the environment you're in. The group that was low and then got moved to high, 71%. Really good. Group that was high, 65%. No difference between any of those. But when we look at that group that went from a high to a low, 38% of the embryos survived. And so they're not changing the diet they're on. This is just in forage that they're allowed to graze. And so even though these animals knew how to graze when there wasn't enough forage for them to do that, when they went from an area that they were used to down right around the time of AI, we see how their body thinks that it's going through nutrients getting restricted, and we get a lot higher embryonic loss. And so we can see this happening at any time. Any big changes around the time of AI can have these negative impacts because that cow doesn't know she's pregnant, and the first thing she's going to want to do is conserve energy for her own survival or for lactation if she's got a calf. So what we've really gone to, because we have so many different development systems, is actually consistency. What we want to do is, around the time of AI, how consistent can we be? Whatever heifers are in, and we work with producers that, the question was asked earlier, what about these hoop systems or dry lot systems? We have producers who develop their heifers in a dry lot and just keep them there, and they're getting along fine. Or if they have advantage, the ones that can get them to grass earlier get along great, if they can get them out to grass prior to the breeding season. But around the time of AI, especially during that first month after AI, we don't want to see any big negative changes in what they're consuming or the nutrients that they feel are available to them. Now, one last slide I want to throw in here is a question that always comes up. Well, if we're going to move these animals and we don't want to change them for that first month, I can't keep them in the feedlot the entire time. When can I move animals? So this is actually some work that was done up at Mile City. And what we see is if they were moved 1 to 4 days after AI, 8 to 12, 29 to 33, or 45 to 60 days, what impact did that movement have on basically pregnancy rates. And what's interesting in all of these studies, what they did is to avoid changing environment, they loaded them on a trailer, drove an hour down the road, turned around, drove the hour back, and put them back in the same pen to see what that stress of handling would do. Because if we're going to keep them in the feedlot or keep them in the same environment for a month, it puts them in here, and we actually see just that stress of shipping them, they lost 9% of the embryos. What's interesting is this in one, they actually preg checked the animals before they put them on the trailer, and even just the shipping stress, they still saw a 6% loss. So the rule of thumb on shipping is we want to do it as soon after AI as possible, but that's the worst time to change their diet. And so as we talk a lot about reproduction, is compromises in how do I manage versus getting the best reproduction I can. Now, I was fortunate. I spent a couple of years up at Miles City, Montana. We never saw issues trailing cattle. And so it really is more of an effect. All of these studies have been when they're loaded on a trailer and hauled somewhere. But trailing them is literally pointing them in the direction they need to go and following along behind them. And so handling, and Ronaldo will talk on temperament and stress a lot more, we can see how impact of stress can have on embryo survival too. And so with that, I will be happy to answer any questions.